Jai Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Gopi Jana Balaba Giri Badatari. Gopi Jana Balaba Giri Badatari. Yasoda Nandana Praja Jana Ranjana. Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Banachari. Yamuna Tira Banachari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Gopi Jana Balaba Giri Badadhari. Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Banachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Gopi Jana Balaba Giri Badadhari. Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Banachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Padavajikacharya Stotaras of the Shishimadas Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki ISKCON BBD Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Padavajikacharya Stotaras of the Shishimadas Divine Grace Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Ki Jai Ananta Gaudi Vaishnavrinda Ki Jai Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Premsika Ho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nachananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasiddhi Govinda Bhakti Dekhi Jai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopinath Shamakunda Radhakunda Gidigopadana Ki Jai Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Navadvip Mayapur Dham Ki Jai Ganga Jamuna Maya Ki Jai Tulasi Devi Maharani Ki Jai Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Harinam Sankirtana Ki Jai Brihat Madanga Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shishi Gurungaranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So, reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 12, text 5. Sampada Kratavo Loka Mahisi Bratro Mahi Jambadvipadipacham Cha Yasas Cha Tridivam Tridivam Gatam Samparakratavoloka Mahisi Bratro Mahi Jambadvipadipacham Cha Yasascha Tridivam Gatam Samparakratavoloka Mahisi Bratro Mahi Jambadvipadipacham Cha Yasascha Tridivam Gatam Samparakratavoloka Mahisi Bratro Mahi Jambadvipadipacham Cha Yasascha Tridivam Gatam Vaishnavis. Okay. Sampada opulence. Kratava, sacrifices. Loka, future destination. Mahisi, the queens. Bratara, the brothers. Mahi, the earth. Jambudvipa, the globe, the globe or planet of our residence. Adipacham, sovereignty. Cha, also. Yashaha, fame. Cha, and. Tridivam, celestial planets. Gitam, spread over. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. News even reached the celestial planets about Maharaj Yudhisthira's worldly possessions, the sacrifices by which he would attain a better destination, his queen, his stalwart brothers, his extensive land, his sovereignty over the planet Earth, and his fame, etc.
Report.
Only a rich and great man's name and fame are known all over the world. And the name and fame of Maharaj Yudhisthira reached the higher planets because of his good administration, worldly possessions, glorious wife Draupadi, the strength of his brothers Bhima and Arjuna, and his solid sovereign power over the world, known as Jambudvipa. Here the word loka is significant. There are different lokas, or higher planets, scattered all over the sky, both material and spiritual. A person can reach them by dint of his work in the present life, as stated in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, text 25. No forceful entrance is allowed there. The teeny material scientists and engineers who have discovered vehicles to travel over a few thousand miles in outer space will not be allowed entrance. This is not the way to reach the better planets. One must qualify himself to enter into such planets, happy planets, by sacrifice and service. Those who are sinful in every step of life can expect only to be degraded into animal life to suffer more and more the pangs of material existence. And this is also stated in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 16, text 19. Maharaj Yudhisthira's good sacrifices and qualifications were so lofty and virtuous that even the residents of the higher celestial planets were already prepared to receive him as one of them. Om Aginata Madandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militamiena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitamiena Bhutale Swayamupagaramayam Dadati Swaparantikam. So we're hearing about the fame and fortune, good fortune, of Maharaj Yudhisthira. But it probably should be stated right away. Just we heard it in the last class, in the last verse given by Vijay Prabhu, what the reason for this was. And clearly it was that he was a pure devotee of Krishna. As stated in the previous translation, it says that he had no personal ambition and was free from all sorts of sense gratification. Why? Because of his continuous service unto the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna. See? So that's where, that was the main cause of all his good qualities and his good fortune, that he was a pure devotee of Krishna. He was engaged in continuous service unto the lotus feet of Lord Krishna without any material motivation. And it's stated in the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam that when somebody becomes a pure devotee of Krishna, that's what happens. You know, they develop all good qualities, good fortune, good qualities. It all just starts coming their way. It's not an accident. You know, there's an invisible, in one purport here in the first canto, Prabhupada says there's an invisible chain of cooperation between human beings, demigods, Krishna. So when somebody becomes a pure devotee of Krishna, Krishna's behind the scenes there, and he's, you know, it's actually Krishna makes sure that these kind of things, these qualities develop when they're that person, and you know, good things, you know, the good fortune kind of comes his way. So that verse is, yes, yasti bhaktir bhagavati akinchana, savar gunas tatra samasate sura, harava bhaktasya kuto mahadguna, manor ratanasati davato bihi. And the way, this is the translation from the fifth canto. It's all the demigods and their exalted qualities, such as religion, knowledge, and renunciation, become manifest in the body of one who has developed unalloyed devotion for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. So this is the main reason why, for Maharaj Yudhisthira's great success and good fortune and his good qualities, that he had become he had developed unalloyed devotion for the Supreme Personality of God, and as a result of that, all these things were developing. It would have been really nice to have the association of Maharaj Yudhisthira. It would be nice to have the association of somebody who has all good qualities. And so on that note, this morning I just decided I tried to put a little bit of a list together of some admirable qualities, of, you know, good, desirable qualities for a person to have. And I came up with a few here. Honesty. The person would be honest, loyal, truthful, dependable, considerate, reliable, unselfish, unkind, unselfish, kind, clean, responsible, gentle, reasonable, courteous, helpful, appreciative or grateful, self-disciplined, forgiving, respectful, patient, ethical, cooperative, tolerant, self-controlled, rational, upright, meaning the person has integrity, and the list goes on. But, I mean, imagine what it would be like to have the association of somebody who had all those good qualities. It would be really nice. Say, Maharaj Yudhisthira, he had all those good qualities, and Krishna has all those. Krishna is not only has all those good qualities to an unlimited degree. Krishna is the origin of all those qualities. In the Bhagavad Gita chapter 10, text 8, Krishna says, Aham sarva shapabhavo matak sarvam pavartate iti matpa bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvita, that I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. And the wise who know this perfectly engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. So everything emanates from Krishna. So Krishna is the origin of all these good qualities. The list went on. I just, you know, mentioned maybe less than half of them. And he possesses them to an unlimited degree. So really something to look forward to. You know, it's like the supreme person is more than just the person who is the origin of everything. You know, it's like the unlimitedly powerful and unlimitedly intelligent. He's got all these good qualities. So as we, you know, when we advance sufficiently in devotional service, we'll be actually able to associate with Krishna. You know, we'll actually be able to appreciate Krishna's personality and appreciate these qualities. And something to look forward to. You know, really be a wonderful experience, just like it's a wonderful experience even in this world when you meet somebody and they're, you know, a really nice person. They've got a lot of good qualities. You like it. You enjoy it. Well, Krishna has all those unlimited good qualities to an unlimited degree. So it's going to be really nice. So that's a point. It's mentioned here, though, that Maharaj Yudhisthira was... He had sovereign power over the world, and Prabhupada is known as Jambadweep. So we don't generally know the world as Jambadweep. I mean, even in the Bhagavatam, the contemporary name for the world is Bharat Varsha, right? Or this is, you know, Bharat Varsha. But here it's specifically said that Maharaj Yudhisthira had sovereign power over the world known as Jambadweep. So there is a difference. In other words, he had sovereign power over a world that was quite a bit larger than the world as we know it today, right? You know, the planet Earth. Jambadweep is a geographical, how would you say it, name that is not known, you know, to modern-day geographers, but it refers to... the cosmology as described in the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And in the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, get my notes out now, Jambadweep is described as a central island of a series of ring-shaped oceans and islands having at the diameter a central island of a series of ring-shaped oceans, and then an island, ocean, then an island, ocean, then an island. And the diameter of the entire structure, which is called Bhumandala, is 4 billion miles. But Jambadweep itself has a diameter of 800,000 miles. And that's approximately the same as what scientists currently accept as the diameter for the sun. So Jambadweep is quite large. In contrast, the diameter of the Earth, as it's understood today by scientists, is about 8,000 miles. See? So in other words, Jambadweep is about 100 times larger than the Earth, as we know, the Earth of our experience. Okay? Jambudweep is not just a question of it being larger. It's quite a different place. Jambudweep has some striking features to it. One of them is a mountain right in the center of Jambudweep, which is 2/3 of a million miles high. Actually, it's called a mountain, but it's more technically what's the correct term for is a pericap, which is a fancy way of saying an ice cream cone. It's shaped like an ice cream cone, and if you can imagine that. So it's right in the middle of Jambudweep is this island. I mean, sorry, it's this mountain shaped like an ice cream cone, meaning it's assuming this is the base, it goes out like that for 2/3 of a million miles. At the top, the diameter at the top is 1/3 of a million miles, and at the bottom, I can't remember, it's about half of that. And it's made of gold. And at the top of that mountain, in the middle of it, Lord Brahma has a residence, and 8 other demigods like Agni, Varuna, Vayu, etc., they have their residences around the outside, the outskirts there. So that's what's going on at the top of Mount Meru. It's called Mount or Sumeru, in the middle of Jambudweep. And then when you get down on the ground again in Jambudweep, it's divided up into 8 regions, 8 varshas, or regions, and they're separated by mountains. And the lowest of those mountains is 16,000 miles high, just to give you an idea. Whereas in comparison, the highest mountain is on the earth as we know it is the Himalayan mountains. What's it called? Mount Everest, yeah. Mount Everest, and that's about 6 miles high in comparison. So, and of these 9 varshas, 8 are heavenly regions. 8 of those varshas are heavenly regions. And one of them is not, and that's Bart Varsha, you know, the one that's not the heavenly region, Bart Varsha. Before I say something about Bart Varsha, I'll describe a little bit about these other 8 Varshas. They're heavenly regions, and what specific purpose of them is their places of residences for beings who are returning from the Svarga, you know, the Divya Svarga planets. These are known as Boma Svarga, or actually, sometimes they're known as what's the word? There's Boma Svarga, Divya Svarga, and what's the other one? There's 3. I can't remember. It's not coming to me. Anyway, like the subterranean heavenly planets. But anyway, the point is just that. What? Svarga? And this is one term that I'm not. It's okay. But anyway, the point is that when you finish enjoying in these higher, in the Svarga Loka heavenly planets, right, then, and you still have some pious credits left, then you before you actually return to Bart Varsha, which is where you kind of work out your, you know, good and bad fortune, you can enjoy the remaining. It's like if when you come in, you can enjoy the remaining pious credits in those other Varshas. It's like if you go on a vacation and to some fabulous place like, you know, Hawaii or Tahiti or whatever, and then you're on your way back now, back to your simple little 2-bedroom apartment in the Bronx or whatever, you know. And you have some money left at the airport. So, you know, you buy a room, you rent a room and you go out, you shop in the airport, something like that. It's not as good as where you were on the vacation, but it's not like being home. So it's like that. So these other 8 Varshas are like that. They're heavenly, and it's described that the residents in those other Varshas, they live for 10,000 years, and they have the strength of 10,000 elephants. So it's quite a bit different. And this is on Jambudweep now, okay? And but then Bart Varsha, which is the part of Jambudweep that's most reminiscent as of the earth as we know it, is described as, it's in the southernmost region of Jambudweep, and it's described as a field of fruitive activities in which human beings struggle with adverse conditions and elevate or degrade themselves by their actions. So that's, that's what happens in Bart Varsha, which is that part of Jambudweep. And, so Maharaj Yudhishthira was the emperor, you know, or he had, as is described, he had sovereign power over that world, that, which obviously involves something more than just 3-dimensional space. I say, obviously what's being described here is not, because, like, you know, where, even from where we are, if we were able to we're close enough so that we should be able to see Mount Sumeru. You know, something that's 2/3 of a million miles high, made of gold. And we're not that far away. But we don't. So what's the understanding here? Well, the understanding here is that there are different dimensions. You know, and it's like Maharaj Yudhisthira was in contact with, like, aside from the fact that he was a pure devotee, but he was in contact with higher dimensional realms even within the material world. And you could say, well, here's an example. Imagine that this morning we didn't have a morning program at all, okay, and there was no activity here in the temple room till just now, you know, till the class began. And we decided to let some of these people who were partying all night over there in the Masonic Lodge to come in here after being up all night and just crash out. We put down some nice thick yoga mats for them, and we, you know, gave them a pillow and arranged a little blanket for them, and we said, okay. And about, you know, about 6:45, we said, okay, about 7:15, just go ahead, crash out. And they just were up all night. So they would lie down, they'd go to sleep. And then we came in here, and we quietly came in, and we started having the Bhagavatam class, and I was talking like this. Probably most of them would not wake up. They'd be right here, but they'd be fast asleep. They'd be sound asleep. See, so even though they were here, they wouldn't be aware of what we're talking about, because they'd be asleep. See, it's not like when you're asleep that you're not experiencing anything, but you're on a certain level of experience. So the point is, I'm making an analogy. Just like somebody could be here, but not be here, okay? As in the example of these people who would be here, but be fast asleep. We're here, but we're not here. You see? We're here. We're experiencing some level of material reality, but not the full. So just like a person is asleep. You know, it's an experience. It's not unreal. It's an experience, but it's not on the, you know, it's obviously quite different from what you experience when you're awake. And what you experience when you're awake as a, you know, an ordinary human being from a, you know, gross sensory perspective is quite different from what you experience as a yogi, a rishi, or a demigod. You know, one of these people who have expanded sensory and, you know, higher consciousness. They experience even the, what to speak of spiritual, which they maybe don't experience at all, but they're experiencing even the material world in a different way. They're experiencing the material world in a different way. So, and that's how to understand one explanation of how to understand the cosmology described in the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, to kind of say it a little bit more succinctly. The cosmological system of the Bhagavatam is a simplified description of the universe as it appears from the viewpoint of demigods, rishis, and highly elevated human beings who are the principal characters in this work. Our familiar conception of the earth as a globe is a valid account of our immediate environs as they appear from the viewpoint of persons with ordinary human senses. So just to put it in perspective there. So Maharaj Yudhisthira, as I said, was, just like we say every morning when we read the translation, you know, to Prabhupada, the Gurvastikam song. Is that Gurvastikam? Yeah. No. Yeah, Guru Puja song. That your fame is spread all over the three worlds. See, that's more than one world. That's what's being referred to. Maharaj Yudhisthira's fame was spread all over, I don't know about three, but it was more than just the earth as we know it. He was famous, well, let's mention, even in the heavenly planets. And he was, what to speak of fame, he was ruling all of Jamadweep, which is a lot more than just the earth of our experience. So that's kind of, you know, an significant point. And what other things did we have here? Now, it's mentioned here in the purport that Prabhupada goes on to say that a person can reach, there are different lokas or higher planets scattered all over the sky, both material and spiritual. A person can reach them by dint of his work in this present life as stated in the Bhagavad Gita 9.25. Now that verse, Bhagavad Gita 9.25, is Yanti Deva Vrata Devan Pitrin Yanti Pratir Vrataha Bhutani Yanti Bhuteja Yanti Mangyaji Nopimam. So it's that. Now the translation for that is those who worship the demigods take birth among the demigods. Those who worship the ancestors go to the ancestors. Those who worship the ghosts and spirits will take birth among such beings. And those who worship me will live with me forever. So Prabhupada's saying in the purport, he's talking about how people go to other planets as a result of their work. And then he quotes that verse. But in the verse, what's being described is worship. You see? So worship is a kind of work. This is only the least intelligent human beings think that they can improve their situation by the sweat of their brow, you know, by just working hard in the conception that, you know, there's nothing beyond this life, there's nothing before this life. You're here, you dealt a, you know, hand of cards, you just got to make the best of it and just work hard and just, That's the, you know, the approach of the least intelligent, least advanced human beings. Traditionally, historically speaking, people depended or looked towards higher beings to, you know, get ahead in life. And that's what's mentioned in the verse there. You know, Krishna says those who worship the demigods, that's how you, you know, if you want better conditions, you worship the demigods and you go to the demigods. If you're not quite that intelligent, maybe you worship the ancestors and you know, the pitris, and you go there. Even you can get advantages from ghosts and spirits. But, of course, Krishna recommends, but, you know, if you worship me, you'll live with me. So the point is that there's a hierarchy in the universe, and intelligent people are aware of that. In the Vedic times, they were aware of that. So they didn't just, you know, try to improve their life and their situation by working hard. They took advantage of these higher beings. They worshipped, you know, demigods or whatever, or, you know, if they're really advanced, they worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in contrast to today where people just don't think there's anything higher than themselves, than ordinary human beings, and they just kind of try to work hard and make it happen. And which leads on to the next point that Prabhupada makes, which is he makes the point towards the end of the purport that those who are sinful in every step of life can expect only to be degraded into animal life, to suffer more and more pangs of material existence. And this is also stated in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 16, text 19. And we'll turn to that. The idea being that, you know, these people who are thinking that there's nothing higher, you know, there's no guide and control, there's just, when you're born, that's the beginning, when you die, that's the end. And then, you know, they're just trying to be happy by the, you know, improve their lives and be happy by the strength of their own efforts. And as a result, Prabhupada says here, they, you know, in every step of their life, they're engaging in sinful activities, and they don't know it, obviously, but we know it, that the result is going to be that they'll be degraded into animal life. In other words, the Vedic perspective is, unlike what the vision of the ordinary human, the person out there, is that, not that, you know, you're here and there's nothing, no control, there's no plan, there's no control, it's just what you see is what you get. No, the Vedic way of seeing things is that there is a plan, there is a God, there is a plan, and everything that a human being does is being observed, is being evaluated, and is being responded to. You know, see? And that's confirmed in this statement, and then from the verse Prabhupada just quoted, the 16:19. It says, "Those who are envious and mischievous," this is Krishna speaking, "who are the lowest among men, I perpetually cast into the ocean of material existence, into various demoniac species of life." And in the purport, Prabhupada quotes from the Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto. He says, "It is stated that an individual soul, after his death, is put into the womb of a mother, where he gets a particular type of body under the supervision of superior power." Say, this is supervision of superior power. And therefore, in material existence, we find so many species of life. All are arranged by superior power. So So once again, everything a human being does is observed, evaluated, and responded to. And Sir, in his last class, messed up a little bit on quoting this famous favorite verse of his. So we're going to try to give him another chance this morning to quote it again, because this is one of his favorites. Can you quote it? Third canto, that verse. Okay. Thank you. You're more than you redeemed yourself. Thank you. So we should try to follow in the footsteps of Maharaj Yudhisthira, become pure devotees, develop all the good qualities of the demigods, and bear in mind that I didn't make this point yet, but I'll make it now, that ultimately everything that's happening in material existence is a dream. It's a dream in the sense, not that you're not experiencing it, but it's not the highest level of reality. And that might sound kind of far, but that's confirmed. And I'll read you one verse where Prabhupada confirms that. It's from the fourth canto. I'll get it here in a second. Okay, here we go. So this is from the 29th chapter of the 4th canto. It says, everything happening within time, which consists of past, present, and future, is merely a dream. That is the secret understanding in all Vedic literature. And then the Purport Papa says, factually, all of material existence is only a dream. That doesn't mean we're not experiencing it. Obviously, we're experiencing it. It's real in that sense. But anyways, it's a dream. There is no question of past, present, or future. Persons who are addicted to karma kanda vichar, which means working for future happiness through fruitive activities, are also dreaming. Similarly, past happiness and present happiness are merely dreams. And here it comes. This is the big sentence. The actual reality is Krishna and service to Krishna, which can save us from the clutches of Maya. For the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, text 14, Mameva ye papajante, mayamitam tarantite. Those who surrender unto me can easily cross beyond my illusory energy. So that's it. The actual reality is Krishna and service to Krishna. You know, we don't want to stay here. We don't want to be elevated to any higher planets in the material world, because it's phantasmic. It's ultimately just dream in comparison to the reality. As Prabhupada says here, reality is Krishna and service to Krishna. So following in the footsteps of Maharaj Yudhisthira, we should just focus on that, like he did. Focus on Krishna and service to Krishna. And as a result of doing that, we'll develop all the good qualities of the demigods. And at the end of this lifetime, we'll be awake from this dream of material existence and be able to be with Krishna, the Supreme Person, with all those good qualities in the spiritual world. So I'll stop there. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Anybody else? Oh, it's just a comment, but you can get the microphone here. Okay, got a question there?
Thank you very much for the nice class. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada, he was saying that Maharaj Yudhisthira, he has lots of interaction with the celestial beings, right? So I'm just wondering, you know, how can he see the celestial beings? How he was contacting with those celestial beings?
Well, it didn't directly say, but it did sort of say it in the sense that it says there are different lokas, so higher planets. I'm sorry, it said he had He was the solid sovereign. He had solid sovereign power over the world, known as Jambudvipa. And I described how Jambudvipa is more than the earth of our experience. So I guess in order to have solid sovereign power over something, you have to be interacting with the environment, that environment, and the personalities who are in that environment. So, well, he was functioning on a higher level. You know, he was functioning on a higher level than what an ordinary human being is able to function. That would be the way I would understand it. Judy Karma, you want to pass the mic, say something about that?
No, I think you're right.
Okay. That's okay. Off the hook. Yeah, dear Lolita.
Hare Krishna, Guru. Thank you for a wonderful class. I have a question about Jambudvipa. In the fifth canto, there is a chapter, the residents of Jambudvipa offering prayers to Lord Narsingadev. So is this the same Jambudvipa where Yudhishthira Maharaj was?
Yeah, I don't think there's, to the best of my knowledge, there's not more than one Jambudvipa, at least in this universe. There's one Jambudvipa, so that would be the same Jambudvipa.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Gantraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
It's your typical 8 in the morning class. Oh my gosh. So much to think about. Thank you for...